Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Coffee with Kim. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a registered nutritionist, I'm a master NLP practitioner, and I specialize in helping women break free from unhelpful eating patterns. I help them with weight concerns, body image, and disordered eating. And this channel is a place where I can interview and talk with other women who are either experts in the field or also women who have just had their own journeys and own experiences dealing with weight, body image, and disordered eating challenges, as well as even mental health. And sometimes these two things come together. So what's interesting is a lot of experts and well-known health professionals in the field, they have actually also gone through their own challenges. And I think it's really cool when we can give them a place to share with you guys the real behind the scenes that we don't always get to see. So please give a nice warm welcome to Katie Parsons.
Hello.
So Katie is also a registered nutritionist, and she's also a qualified personal trainer who runs her own personal training business in Auckland. Now, I'll just also explain another reason why Katie's on the show is me and Katie actually know each other from school days, don't we, Katie?
Way back, like intermediate school days.
Yes. Yeah. So we grew up in that time when social media was only just starting to become big, and Kate has also done bodybuilding, which I've done too, and so we've kind of navigated this diet culture Instagram phase together, and we're still navigating it, aren't we?
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. Yeah.
So really happy that Kate's gonna come on here and talk a bit about her own journey. So let's actually start right there, Kate. So we all have, I feel, that moment in time where our body image journey or our journey with health or food kind of starts. So what we see, if someone wants to follow you on social media, they just see you as like the fit, healthy Katie Parsons. And, you know, has it always been like that? When did you even start getting into health or even thinking about food?
I think growing up, I was like not into sports, like hated PE, like was definitely not one of those people who were like born fit, you know, like born and bred that way or anything. Like I did pick up a couple of sports and that, but it was never really like anything I loved. And then I probably, when I got to maybe like, and this is so young, but like maybe like 16, I started to like, because I used to walk up to school for like a massive hill, which you will know. And like I would just get to the end and I would be sweating, I'd be exhausted, and it just took me so long. And that was probably the time that I realized, I was like, not necessarily thinking about my body, but the fact that like I was really, really unfit. So that was something in the back of my mind, but it was definitely like being in high school, like, and I'm sure everyone can relate to this, like comparison is something that like teenage girls, I mean, and guys will just tend to, 99% of people will. Mm-hmm. So I did find that because I happened to have like so many naturally really lean friends that like I did kind of feel like that sort of pressure. And then there was a point where I was 17 where I got a boyfriend who was really into the gym, and he actually introduced me to that for the first time. And then I kind of did the cliche thing of like I would go in every day and do like, you know, 40 minutes on the cross trainer and then like 20 minutes on the treadmill and then like not really do any weights or really know what I was doing. But even that in itself, because I noticed it with like the walking to school hill that I was getting fitter, right? So my fitness was getting there, but I wasn't like happy with my body image. And then I guess just as soon as I picked up weights and started seeing that change and seeing that change in confidence that I got, the rest is history. I just couldn't stop.
Gotcha. Okay. So there was a health trigger, which was you actually feeling puffed, like walking up a hill. So that motivated you. Then you also have just sort of said that there was this comparison going on a little bit in terms of how you looked like compared to your friends. And that was at an intermediate school, was it?
That was like, it started at intermediate. It probably started even before then. Like, and it sounds so sad to say, but I reckon I was probably body conscious from like 9 or 10.
Wow.
And I think that, like, you know, that really says something about what, you know, we're exposed to. And, you know, you touched on the fact that we grew up before the social media. If I was feeling like that then, I cannot imagine what girls and guys are feeling now, being, you know, exposed to all this stuff from the age of like 7. Like, it's ridiculous. So, but I guess at the same time, in growing up in the 90s and early 2000s, like, you know, there was always like that famous Kate Moss quote, it's like, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. And,
yeah,
you know, those were the role models that we had with these, like, and that was the look that was, I guess, like, yeah, in at the time. So mainstream media that we did have access to, that's what we saw.
Yeah.
So like if we were anything,
gap and stuff.
Yeah, exact, totally. The thigh gap thing, like, which if you don't have, you know, the body bone structure, it's not going to happen anyway, but no, you don't know that, you know? So I think that, yeah, it's definitely, I guess there's a lot more, it's like body looks do tend to go through phases, as you've probably seen in social media, but at least there is a little bit more variety in body shapes now in the media that we do see, especially in mainstream media. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that, yeah, that any media has a huge effect on how you feel about yourself, for sure, or where you think you should be, you know?
Should, yeah, that golden word, eh? Where we think we should be.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like, according to who, right?
Exactly. It's not just media, like, that's pretty much it, right?
Yep, yeah, absolutely. Yep. So in terms of your sort of main body image triggers, it was being around friends who lived in smaller bodies who maybe matured at different times. Because it's such a tricky time, right, when you're in going through puberty. I find it hilarious when I look back at like intermediate school, when I was like, I considered myself like the big strong one.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, Kim's got like massive thighs and stuff. And it's just because like you, if you grow at a certain time. Yeah.
You hit puberty earlier than a lot of us did.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I do recall that, you know what I mean? And I think that like, and obviously you're not a like big person at all, but you're probably one of the first people to get boobs.
Yeah, I know.
So it's all relative, right? Especially in that period, because everyone's like, you know, half of us are prepubescent and the other half are like, oh, why am I starting to look different? Like,
yeah, I know. Yeah, so I think a lot of women have like their body image journey can start kind of in that young age, but it's such a variety. So you said that you reckon your body image journey started almost as young as 9, whereas I was just talking to another girl and she said hers didn't necessarily start till university. So yeah, it's just crazy how it can start at any age, can't it?
Absolutely. And I think that, like, you know, it's really sad to me that you know, just saying, I've never really, I guess, said that out loud. You know, it is really sad. And I think that it just depends on, you know, what kind of comments you grow up around, and whether, you know, like for me, I do remember being younger, like a lot of the compliments were physical, you know, like the best compliment you could get would be like, oh my God, you're so pretty. Or like, oh my God, your body's amazing. Whereas now it's kind of, you know, like the way I would ideally, you know, compliment my children would be, wow, you're so kind, or, you know, like, you're so intelligent, or like, you're really good at this. And, you know, I think that that's just kind of like what the, you know, top tier compliments I perceived as being at the time. So I think it just comes down to like who you're around, how people talk to you, and, you know, what people seem to focus on. And I do remember a lot of adults around me, you know, commenting on their bodies a lot growing up. So I think that's probably where it stemmed from most.
Yeah, the comments, it's the celebration of, like you say, beauty or thinness or leanness. And that has actually come up with the last two people that I've interviewed, women who've gone through disordered eating or body image challenges. That seems to be a really common, really, really common trend is this trigger from comments, from celebration. And even I remember that was something that really drove me to carry on trying to do, like, you know, run further, get leaner. It's because people start telling you look great.
Yeah, And that's a really, like, obviously that's a great compliment to receive. You're like, thank you, I've worked my ass off, this is great. But then it's kind of like, you know, like, I do recall being at my absolute, like, thinnest and unhealthy. And that's when, you know, people were like, oh my gosh, you look amazing, you know. And I think that it's that, and is where, and obviously no one means it in a bad way. They don't know that you're unhealthy. They're just like, oh, obviously you're working really hard and you look really good. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's never comes from like the bad intentions of everyone else. It's, mm-hmm. you know, but it is really hard to, you know, accept compliments if you are getting bigger. If that's not something that you always aim for, you know, especially, and the only reason that I've kind of found that this happened was because I went from like weight loss journey to then muscle gain journey. Mm-hmm. And then when you switch from the loss to the gain, you don't get as many compliments, right? And then, you know, then you're like, as though that that's a reflection of your progress, you know, but it isn't. And I think that, you know, it's starting to change. I have noticed a shift, especially in my clients, which I find really interesting. I have so much more girls coming to me saying, like, I want to bulk. I want to grow this muscle. I want to, you know, I want to get strong. Like, I have so much less people saying to me they want to lose weight, unless they're in an unhealthy bracket. So there is definitely a, like, noticeable change in who I'm working with anyway.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Makes it a lot easier for you as well, right? I can imagine you can operate from a much, you can feel like it's a much better, it's more in alignment.
Totally. I mean, I'm always going to help people achieve what they want to achieve within like healthy brackets.
Mm.
And we do work a lot on mindset together with clients. We're like, okay, why do you want to lose this weight if they're already healthy, you know? Yeah. So there is a responsibility as someone in the fitness and health industry to, you know, explain to someone who doesn't need those results why they should be shifting the, you know, their focus.
Yeah, it's that why, isn't it? That totally. I think can be something that every practitioner can get their clients to think about. And again, this has been coming up a lot. And also even just for the girls listening, I think, is really checking in on that why. Because I'd love you to kind of explain what you experienced when you did get to, say, your smallest body. What did you think you were going to feel once you got to that smallest, leanest body versus what did you actually feel in the end?
Yeah, so this is really interesting because the first time I got super unhealthy lean, I was probably about 8 kilos lighter than I am now, which is, for me, it's very, very small. So that was the first time, and that was really unhealthy because basically I'd gotten into fitness in the gym, but I was still like partying really, really, really hard, you know. Yeah. So I was doing too much of everything, basically. My body was just stressed, run down, like, ugh. Yeah. So that was like the first one. But the second time was when I did my bodybuilding show. And so when I was in that like party unhealthy stage, I did feel really good. But I wasn't functioning well, so my mental health was really bad. And then when I came into my bodybuilding show, it was really interesting because I got to peak week, and I was obviously like super, super lean, and I could see and I could feel I was really lean, but I still didn't feel good about my body. And that was a big moment for me because it made me realize, I was like, it doesn't matter whether you hit your goals if your head isn't there first. So that was really, really interesting for me. It was a big learning curve. It's like you can have, say, like a goal physique and you can get to it and you won't be happy if you're not happy in your head. So, yeah, that's why the big focus for me is like mindset and like, you know, why you want to get there, or like, is there anything that's psychologically more important than the physical results? So yeah, it's like, that's why a lot of my focus now with my training is like how I feel. So rather than saying like, I want to lose X amount of body fat or I want to lose weight, I'll say I want to enjoy my training and be consistent. Because, like, you know, I ask myself, when do you feel your best? And it's when I'm being consistent, right? So that's, it's kind of like my, I actually got asked this the other day by one of my clients, like, oh, what are your goals? And I was like, just to keep going, you know? And like, when you find that like sweet spot with your lifestyle, that's like balanced, but you know, you feel good in your skin, like, and you're healthy. It's basically, once you get there, just try to keep it. Like, that's it. Like, you made it.
Yeah. I love that. As opposed to it being, I have to get to this specific like weight, shape and size, and it's all about the specific look. What you've done on your journey is you've realized that just by focusing on this specific body fat percentage or this specific look, you don't necessarily get there and then feel good about it. What you're finding is that you feel good about yourself, and you're like, you know, self-confidence and that good healthy feeling that comes from living a lifestyle rather than being a certain weight, shape or size.
Absolutely. And I think that, like, say for example, like I've done a program which was a, you know, 6-week summer shred. I've done it and it works incredibly well and people love it. And I, you know, on the version 2 of my app, I will have preset programs that are 8 weeks long. But I do encourage people not to do the quick fixes unless they have a time sensitive goal, like it's their wedding or they have an event, or like that's justified. You go hard for that 6 weeks. But when it comes to like overall lifestyle, that is so pointless because it's not sustainable. 6 to 8 week programs are intense because they're made for a short period, right? So it's definitely like figuring out like what's going to work best for you, because again, why you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And in terms of some of the like the goals outside of just body change that people are deep down actually coming to see you for, you know, from your perspective, I've got my own like list of common ones that people want when they come to work with me. Typically, like, what are people actually wanting, even from losing weight or getting leaner? What is the what's even more important than that to them deep down?
Well, I think that like it all comes down to how you feel in your own skin, right? And I think, you know, when you feel confident or sexy, or like you're like, this is, you know, like, this is, I'm in my own body and this is my body and I love it. Like, I think it's all about the feeling. Like, if you're not feeling good in your clothes, like, and you're not like, you know, you haven't got the energy and, you know, you just feel a bit bleh, with even just a little bit of an extra layer on or whatever, or more, whatever, it basically leaks into other areas of your life. So, and this is something I noticed personally, and this is something that I noticed with my clients as well, is that, you know, if you say you put your jeans on after summer, it's coming into like now autumn, and they don't fit, and you're like, all of a sudden you start thinking about this, or you like you wear them out anywhere and you're sitting there thinking about how uncomfortable you are, or like you're at social occasions and you're like, oh, I'm supposed to be trying to reach this goal, so I can't eat this. And then like it does spill over into your social life and every other area of your life, because you're thinking about your like body rather than where you are. I think that the main reason, like the underlying thing, is so that people aren't distracted from life by their body.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because if that's all you're focusing on, right, as opposed to living the lifestyle, it can consume your thoughts, right? I mean, can you remember back to a time when, whether you had a social occasion or just like your day-to-day living and making food choices, was there ever a time where you felt like that was on your mind 24/7? When am I going to have the next snack? Can I even have this pizza with my friends?
I think when I, like, obviously I've got a lot more knowledge about nutrition now in the last few years than I did prior. But I literally had no knowledge. Like, if I think, I remember being like 16 or 17, going into I think I went into like a pharmacy or like a Health 2000 or something, and I asked them, I was like, I want to lose weight, what could I do? And I bought these like appetite suppressants and, you know, like it just stupid stuff like that, like where I just had obviously no nutritional knowledge, so, and you just don't know what to do and you don't know what's good and what's bad, so you cut out everything. And I think that like it's just lack of knowledge causes you to avoid absolutely everything. Like, we know that you should avoid, or like, you know, like sugars, alcohol, fast food. We know we should, you know what I mean? But the reality is there's no one food that makes you unhealthy or makes you, you know, gain weight or lose weight or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's definitely been phases before I had the knowledge where I would be, you know, I'd pre-look at menus and, you know, I'd go on my Fitness Pal and I'd calculate roughly how much they were, or I'd be sitting at the dinner table putting it in my Fitness Pal while I'm at dinner, like thinking about it. And then the next day, like skipping a meal because I'd overdone my calories. And like, it was just, it's just so like consuming. And I've even, sometimes I need to like reel it in even now. So like this whole year, I haven't used my Fitness Pal, which might sound ridiculous, but yes, but that was a huge, huge step for me. After I did my bodybuilding comp in 2018, it was just something that I was so consumed with even now. And it's only really this year that I've actually managed to maintain without tracking absolutely everything. And I think it just comes with more knowledge and practice. But yeah, it's just one of those things.
That is so key. And you know what? That is exactly what girls, I think, why they come to see nutritionists, right? It's they do want some more knowledge around it. And this is where I don't totally always agree with the order at which, say, the intuitive eating model runs through. And I'm interested to get your perspective on this. But when you're in that such, when you're in such a confused state around how to nourish yourself, being told, I just want you to eat intuitively and eat what you crave, and just trust your body, like ditch the app altogether, go from bodybuilding tracking to just eat whatever you feel like.
It's scary. It's, yeah. Not being in control of the numbers is probably one of the most scariest changes you'll make. That's where we come in, I guess, because you're just like, this is what you want to eat.
but it does help that we've had the knowledge, right? And we actually had that change. I think through my journey as well, going to university and learning about science and learning how to look at a health claim come in and be able to know if that was worth listening to or not, I would say that gave me an advantage. And would you sort of say the same in terms of allowing you to be more intuitive but with knowledge?
Yeah, 1,000%. It's quite a like hard one to kind of explain, but I feel like I'm always learning, but like at the same time now, any like, you know, if someone says something, and social media is a hard place because it's really hard to like find someone who actually knows what they're talking about a lot of the time. Like, because there are elements of truth to all of these ridiculous fads, right?
So prove anything basically.
But then it comes down to like, yeah, it really does come down to knowledge, and having more knowledge is really is power in this situation. Like, because you can say, look, okay, so a great example is keto, right? Which is like one of the like most common, like, oh, if you, you know, lose a lot of weight, you want to go on keto, right? And then it's like, yes, it can be great if you're 1,000% stuck to it for like the rest of your life, basically. And then as soon as you have one day off it, like, it's all over. You know, so like, you know, there's just so many, like, every bit of information can apply to someone in some way.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so difficult, is there's no one answer for everyone or everything. It you know, it depends on, you know, the state your body's in, your hormone health, you know, your lifestyle, your age bracket, like your gender, like just goals, everything, like there. And I think people don't realize it's not just taking your weight and your height and your age and calculating and then giving you something. It's like figuring out what state your body is in when they come to you. Like, you know, are you, for example, I've had people like adrenal fatigue, like their hormones are imbalanced. They're incredibly stressed, and like, you know, and then there's all this, like, you know, there might be psychological trauma. Like, there's so many things going on. You can't lose, like, you lose body fat or gain muscle or anything until you've at foundation baseline with all of these other areas. And so there is so much more to than just what you're eating, but it's basically like making sure your body's working properly.
Yeah. Now, you've raised some really good points there. I really like that. I think, and I totally agree with you, there is no black and white view with pretty much anything. And there's like a couple of things in nutrition that we're pretty certain on. For example, we know that most people don't do well on a lot of processed food, for example.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's kind of like, you know, maybe like five things that are like, that's the goal.
That's fact.
But when it comes to, I guess, like certain styles of eating, and, you know, what works for one person doesn't work for the next. And, you know, fasting is another one that's like interesting. You know, like all of this other, you know, ways of eating, basically.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, technically, say, some people can feel good on vegetarian. Some people can feel good on gluten, can be fine on gluten. Some people can be fine on dairy, right? So we, and then you also have all these research papers that are strongly supporting these health benefits of something like keto. So it just gets so confusing to everybody, right? Because you can pretty much... There's research papers to say this is going to give you this health benefit. Then, like you say, we can't just look at the physical side. And you raised a really good point. Even if say something like keto did mean that you had this massive change in inflammatory markers, for example, or you could live, you know, an extra day longer in your life. if by doing that then triggered more stress, or it triggered an eating disorder, or it stopped you enjoying your life. It's like
it's just not worth it anymore, right? So exactly. You have to like a lot of people hate this word, but you have to take a holistic approach, like you really do. Like some people hate that, like, oh, holistic, like, yes, it's everything. You can't just you know, eat something and then expect everything to be okay. Like, you know, there's so much more to it. But yeah, it's you're right. I mean, there are some health benefits to different things, but it doesn't necessarily mean the whole picture is going to work out well for you in like with your lifestyle in the long term. And if you can't sustain something, then it's not a lifestyle change. And if it's not a lifestyle change, it's not sustainable, maintainable results, right?
Absolutely. Awesome. Okay, so going back to your journey that you've had so far. So you had your triggers around that, like primary school, intermediate time, and then got into the bodybuilding scene. You said you had like these two moments in your life where you got really, really lean. And then what happened? What was the transition like from going, say, the bodybuilding competition that you did? Can't remember how many. That was a few years ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was 2018, I think.
Quite a few years now. Yeah, gotcha. Okay, so you transitioned from that bodybuilding like diet. I mean, I'm just actually curious what happened with your relationship with food after bodybuilding, because a lot of women have different experiences. Most women that I know of end up in some sort of overeating binge restrict cycle. I know I had definitely had that. Almost more before bodybuilding, a little bit afterwards. But did you get hit with any disordered eating or eating disorders after bodybuilding or around bodybuilding?
I think that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call it disordered eating, but like obsession. Obsession with tracking was a big one that stayed with me for a couple of years after. That was a big one. Mm-hmm. But I do actually remember I had like a, you know, Halo Top ice cream.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was an event. This is when Halo Top was introduced into New Zealand, and I got invited to this event, and it was the week after my bodybuilding show. So bear in mind, I hadn't eaten any sweets, drunk any alcohol, done anything for like my whole prep, right? So like months. And I just remember being at this event, and they had like long tables full of like donuts and chocolate and cookies, and they were covered. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know why, but none of the girls there were eating any of it. And I just remember being like, once I started, I could not stop. And I took like tubs home of all the stuff, and I just went for it. And I got so sick from that, it was actually quite good, because it like made me not do the binge and purge thing after that. That was kind of like the thing that was like, okay, this is like not gonna go good. So yeah, I ended up being quite healthy and fine after that, and reverse dieting quite well. But that's when the obsessive compulsive tracking side. So in terms of like, essentially it can be, it's just obsession, and I feel like that's so unhealthy, you know, to the point where, you know, like mentally punish myself and like physically with exercise punish myself if I went over a certain amount of calories, you know. And then the result of that was me messing up my hormones entirely. So then I ended up overeating, overtraining, undersleeping, and becoming so, my body became in such a state of stress that like I couldn't see any results in terms of like gaining muscle or losing body fat unless I absolutely destroyed myself at the gym, like with exercise, like so often. And then that made it worse, and it became this like domino effect of like losing my cycle and overeating, overtraining, and then undereating, overtraining, and then, you know, getting to like the point of adrenal fatigue after relying on caffeine to stay awake and keep going. And and then yeah, it kind of just basically snowballed into this, like, until I got to this point where I realized I was just like, my body is not in a good state. And that's where my comment before kind of came from. Sorry, I'm not choking. I'm like, it's there, I don't want to get it out here. That's where my comment came before about, you know, really like me placing importance on the state of your everything in your body, because that was kind of like that obsession with not gaining weight then resulted in an aftermath of decreased health and quality of life, and me then hitting another really low, like, mental health wise, because my body wasn't working properly. Because I was being really hard on it, you know, both mentally and physically. So I wouldn't necessarily say it went disordered eating, but it was, you know, my mental health suffered from the focus. Yeah, for sure.
And I think this is where this disordered eating / eating disorder, food obsession, orthorexia space can be so confusing for women. So something, it's interesting that even for you, at that time when you were really struggling, you wouldn't, if you saw somebody advertise to you about eating disorders or disordered eating, that wouldn't have necessarily clicked that person could help you, could it? Because you didn't even consider yourself as having disordered eating. You just knew that you're really overthinking food, you're obsessed about it, and your health is suffering. And I think so many girls are actually quite confused who are in that state that, say, you were in. So there'll be girls watching this who probably have never spoken, like, they could be dealing with exactly what you were dealing with, and I've never spoken to anybody about it, and they literally don't know what, like, what do we even call this, right?
Absolutely, because I'm thinking about it now, and I'm like, it sounds like disordered eating, but I group it more as a mental health issue. But then that also stems into a lot of eating disorders, is, you know, it's a, you know, projects from mental health issues. So I think that, like, you're totally right, because, you know, in, I mean, by your definition, would you call that an eating disorder?
So I wouldn't call it an eating disorder, and so I hope this is good to clarify for those listening. So an eating disorder is specifically either anorexia nervosa, bulimia, or binge eating disorder. But the type of binge eating disorder that you have to have to be considered an eating disorder is literally like, can barely move on the floor, kind of that bad, rather than just like an overeating episode. But then also with disordered eating, I would say the common ones that I think would come to mind when I say disordered eating would be like emotional eating, so eating for reasons other than hunger, or overeating, or say binge eating, but not in the binge eating disorder extreme. But this obsession and this constant thinking about food, I think this needs to be talked about a lot more, because I think it does come into the picture, and you could be not necessarily overeating, you could be not binge eating, right? But you could be still majorly suffering mentally because of the constant thoughts. And that sounds like exactly kind of what you were suffering.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I wouldn't say, definitely wouldn't say I had an eating disorder, but it was, I did have disordered eating. It was like, I mean, there was episodes of binging and purging and food guilt and obsession with food. Totally obsession with food. And I think that, you know, it's really hard for people who, I think it's just so common that it's not considered an eating disorder or like disordered eating, you know what I mean? It's like so normal, like for people to say like, oh, I'm going out for dinner, I'm going to skip lunch, or, you know, like, or I'm drinking tonight, so I won't have dinner, or, you know, like I'm going to eat salads today because I've got lunch out tomorrow, you know? And like, just really like, instead of going, and this is something that actually I've practiced a lot of lately. This is a new thing for me. Okay, so if I have a big plate in front of me, for example, like a whole pizza, I'm like, will absolutely finish that pizza. Like, I don't have a choice. If it's on the plate, it gets finished. So what I have been practicing, and maybe this will help someone, is stopping when I get full. So this is like my issue. I'm like, if this like, learning, and this comes down to me practicing intuitive eating, right? Not just eating what's in the nutrition plan, or like what I've made, but being like, okay, I've had enough now, box it up, save it up, and then if in a couple of hours I'm hungry again, cool, finish it.
Nice.
Instead of like eating myself to death and then a couple of hours later getting hungry again. Stimulated, right?
So because your blood sugar crashes and you're like,
absolutely. So that is something that, like, even though I'm a nutritionist and I've done this for so long, that is something I'm still practicing and getting better at all the time.
And that's like, that's actually not easy. You think about it, we're actually
it's really not.
and this is something I think we can all go easy on ourselves for, is we're probably still in that like in our subconscious mind, in that kind of hunter-gatherer time of like scarcity, where you did have to make the most of food when it was available to then prepare for the winters, or, you know, food at, for a long period of time was quite scarce. And I truly believe that we are technically programmed to do two things: A, finish our plate and finish food that is available to us, and also naturally go for like high energy density, high palatable foods in some ways. Because that's what we used to need to do for survival. So knowledge is one thing, and as you know, you've got the knowledge, and just because you know about it, it doesn't make these sort of subconscious programmings like a piece, you know, a piece of cake. Like, both you and I, we have to be actively practice mindful eating as well.
Absolutely, you don't just wake up and it happens easily. Like, and it's a really interesting point that you brought that up, because, you know, it's, I guess, almost against nature to not want to, like, you know, get as much as you can, you know, in terms of survival, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it's really, really interesting you say that. I've never thought about it that way before, but you're probably right. And like, it's really, really interesting. But I think that, you know, just because, you know, we are health professionals doesn't mean that we're not constantly making an effort to, you know, continue healthy habits or have relapses from old ones.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I do want to talk about the calorie tracking thing. So as always, there's never anything that's totally black and white. Was there ever a time where you were able to track and it didn't impact your mental health? My screen's just done
something. Oh, I've lost you. I can hear you, but your screen's gone.
My screen's gone.
Your webcam just decided not to do it anymore.
I'll just unplug it and then plug it back in.
I got a nice picture of you instead. Yeah, I feel like I'm just going to stare at myself talking.
No, so good. My friend Chelsea can edit.
Oh, that's cool. Sorry, what did you say? I've got a bit of a goldfish memory.
Oh, I know. Oh, that's really weird. It suddenly stopped working. Okay. What I might have to do. That's going to be a major problem because I've got clients tonight.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness. Hang on. I know. It probably is working. I just forgot to actually click turn on video. I know what I was saying. I was talking about is there ever like so I want to go back to the to this concept of like app tracking. Did you feel like that disordered relationship, I'm gonna call it a disordered relationship with food, you could say, we'll say the obsessing, did that start immediately when you got the app, or did it start kind of like harmless and it was just this like genuine curiosity? Like, do you think it's even possible for women to have a healthy relationship with food whilst tracking on apps? I'm just curious to get your perspective.
I think you can.
Okay.
However, it took me a very long time because I do remember the very first time I downloaded my Fitness Pal, mm-hmm. and I was 14, I think, and I was on a trip to the UK to see my family. And I remember because I was on my BlackBerry, so this is like pre-iPhone, like mm-hmm. that long ago. And I remember like downloading it and being like, oh my God, this is something I can track, because this is like when I was young, and you know, that's mm-hmm. obviously a big point of where I started to really worry about what I was eating and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, fast forward, like, however many years later, my maths is terrible, but I'm a lot older now. and I've only just this year learned not to use it.
Mm-hmm.
But last year, mm-hmm. I don't feel like I was using it in an unhealthy way at mm-hmm. all. I used it to go from a set nutrition plan into balanced eating. Mm-hmm. So, but in a way, because like basically what I'd done is I tried going through phases of not tracking because I knew I needed to transition out of it. But what that did was it made me so much more self-conscious about my body, because I was like, I didn't know if I was making progress or not. Whereas when you have your macros set, you know you're not going off track, right?
Yeah.
So basically I used it for a while to try new recipes and blah, 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 blah. And so I like made these recipes and then started eating those without tracking. And then mm-hmm. I kind of basically created like a bunch of recipes that I thought had no, because it eliminated the food guilt.
Yeah, because you can actually, you can say you want to have like a pizza or a burger or something, and you know that you want it to have roughly a nice balance of carbs, fats, and protein. If you can, I guess, if you know that a certain macro-based meal is going to keep you full from here to here, you just want to try and make more meals like that. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, because it's not about the calories for me. I was like, well, how do I know I'm getting enough protein? How do I know I'm getting enough fats? Like, I know that I'm not going to, you know, gain lots of weight off of this, but like, am I going to lose my muscle mass that I've trained so hard to keep? So it was basically more about that, and I did use it as a tool to make that transition.
Yeah.
So I do believe that there are positive ways in which you can track. I really do. But if you become obsessive and you're like I was sitting out at a restaurant, like tracking everything and tracking every bit of alcohol, and be like, okay, what's a vodka soda? What's a rosé? You know, when you start doing that and it's consuming you over your environment, that's when I feel like it's a problem. And you should start thinking about how to use it to come out of there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I do believe you can use it in a healthy way, but you have to have in the back of your mind, like knowing when to put it down
mm-hmm.
and knowing when to give yourself a free pass mm-hmm. and like knowing when it's time to let it go.
Mm. Yes. And it sounds like another way that you felt that it wasn't that bad is when you were focusing on it more of like, what can I be putting into my day? Like, am I getting enough?
Not taking it out. Absolutely.
Yeah, enough fat.
It was definitely a shift in what I wanted to achieve. I was like, I want to, you know, maintain my physical results while working on, you know, not being, having the mental stress of like tracking or worrying about food or having food guilt. So it was like different elements at play, but I mean it has been incredibly helpful. Like I do believe that tracking things can be really helpful, and you know, for a lot of my clients it gives them reassurance that they're on track. So it is kind of, you know, like I have clients who have nutrition plans who still write everything in my Fitness Pal, and you know, I've got access to their food diary. So it helps me see that they're following it. But that is why in version 2 of my app that I have people check off their meals as they go. So that's how I'm going to keep them accountable from now, instead of logging their food, because I do feel that it then becomes obsessive, you know, and I don't want to facilitate that obsession. I feel like, yeah, it all depends on who you are, how you feel, what your state is about your body before. Yeah. Like, I would never recommend someone tracking unless they wanted to get an idea of what they're currently on and work from that. So say like a food diary for a week.
Yeah, like at a curriculum. Like,
yeah, rather than doing it every day for the rest of your life, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it sounds like you're very aware of it all now, right? You've gone through the journey, you've experienced like benefits of things like tracking, and you've also experienced what it's like when it takes over your life. And like you say, you're also still on your journey of figuring out that balance for you, like you say, like this next phase is not tracking at all and seeing how that goes. And I think it's nice to be able to give ourselves permission to trial and to self-discover without experiencing judgment from either ourselves, like, or from others. You know, there's a lot of very opinionated people out there who will say, don't do this, that's a terrible idea, you're stupid for doing that, or that's damaging, whatever. But at the end of the day, we're all on our own journey, right, at our own pace.
Absolutely. And I think so many things can be taken, like, either out of context or in the wrong way. And one that's really interesting to me, especially on social media, is full day of eating or what I eat in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? The reason I post them is to show how much you can eat and still lose that, you know, like, or how you can have balance, you know. Mm-hmm. If I was bodybuilding, for example, and on a shred, I wouldn't post them. You know, so I think that, like, everything can be bad to some people in some context.
Yes, yeah.
But it's all about what your approach is and what your intention is with posts like that. And also when you're looking at posts like that, are you being like, oh, I'm going to eat exactly like them? Or are you saying, oh, okay, so they eat really regularly, they eat nutrient-dense foods, like, and that sort of thing. So it depends on, you know, what you're giving and what you're taking from, like, content and, you know, information.
Yes, and you've just brought up such an interesting topic here, which is, where does the responsibility lie? Does it, when it comes to the outcome from things like a post of whether it's your body, whether it's food. So, like, the woman listening, like, I'm sure all girls listening, following some sort of person probably in the health space, whether it's like a fitness person or a nutritionist, or there'll be something that you're following where you get a bit of inspiration from in terms of health. And it's like you say, like, I think there's probably a mix in terms of where the responsibility lies. I think we obviously have a responsibility not to be thinking about, is what we're posting going to be triggering? But at the end of the day, like you say, Katie, like, we could be, there's a, you can trigger anybody. Like, I think I did a post around the importance of eating whole foods in conjunction with intuitive eating, and then got slammed for being damaging and hurting people because I'm suggesting that you actually eat whole foods whilst also doing intuitive eating, and they're sort of saying, you know, you can't combine the, you can't be giving advice, they should be listening to their bodies. So you're gonna upset somebody at some point, right?
Absolutely. And I feel like if anyone's really following you, they'll know your intentions. Like, and anything that, like, so for example, because I've seen, and that full day of eating what I eat a day thing, the reason that popped up to me is because I've seen, like, in my head, is just recently I've seen a lot of people slamming people for doing them. These need to stop, blah, blah, blah. And I see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
But at the same time, say, for example, in my ones, I write, you know, I post these to give you an idea that you don't need to restrict yourself and you can have balance and get your results. So that is my message, and I make that clear. If someone doesn't read that and has a go at me, that's kind of their problem. You know, because my intention as a nutritionist and a lifestyle coach and a trainer is, of course, to promote healthy habits. Of course, I'm not going to be saying, eat like this if you want to look like me. But at the same time, I do realize that people do look at things on a surface level, and that's what they take from it. But there's only so much you can do about that.
Yeah, because if you were to, and if we were to try and keep everybody happy and not post anything, then you can't actually help anybody, can you? Exactly. Because then you're hiding away and you can't show anything. And it's just going to be a space, I think, that all of us are going to navigate. And I just hope that the girls listening do understand that we're always doing, like you say, if you follow us and you know our intentions. That was a time.
You got it.
I got it in the end. If you know our intentions, I hope that you can always come back to those intentions. And I don't know about you, Katie, but I'd also hope that, and I should probably do this more often, but maybe just get feedback and invite feedback and actually say, if we do post something, I'd be more than happy for somebody to say, hey, Kim, like, I found that actually a little bit triggering, and explain why. And then we can make sure that we're creating content that is helpful and it's not triggering, because at the end of the day, it's our followers that we're trying to support, right? So it's their feedback that matters more than anything.
Absolutely. I've done quite a few stories where I've asked people, like, okay, what do you want to see?
What do you want?
What is, you know, what do you find helpful? And, you know, when I stopped doing them for a while, it was one of the things that people said they found helpful. So if it's helping the people that are following me, you know, then I'm more than happy to do it. But I do try to more strongly convey, I mean, that's just an example. Instead of saying what I eat in a day, it's like a full day of eating on a training day. Instead of, like, I think it's all about, like, you know, trying to see what works for people in terms of the message you put across. But in terms of, like, I think it's always going to be a hard one, but, you know, I think if people have said it's helpful, then you just have to do your best to try and deliver that message in the least triggering way possible. I think this is why, you know, I don't really have experience with, for example, eating disorders, like, as such, as we've discussed before, but that's why I would never post about something like that, because it could trigger someone and I don't know enough about it to make a statement on it. So, you know, I only talk about things that I feel like I have experience with, or feel like, you know, I can justify my response to something. So I really hope that nothing I say is ever triggering. That's obviously never my intention, and I'm sure it'd be the same for you. I mean, but, you know, sometimes you do get people who lash out to you for things, and that's just the nature of putting yourself out there.
Absolutely. There's always going to be somebody that you're gonna upset. And the other thing is, we all do choose who we follow as well. So if somebody was following, say, like, my page, and they got frustrated that I wasn't, say, talking enough about a certain topic that perhaps you're talking about, cool, like, go follow you, you know, for example. You know, if people got frustrated that I'm not talking enough about the gym and I'm talking more about, say, yoga and walks, and they want to be more into the gym space, go follow somebody who is in the gym space. But also vice versa, if you're trying to move away from being obsessed with the gym perhaps, and you're on a different, like, season, and you want to follow somebody who's doing something different, we can do that. So I think, just for those listening, just remember, it's okay to go through different phases, and you can be selective with who you follow, and you're not anti them. You're just trying to align your life and your feed with, you know, people who are making you, who are on the same journey. And sometimes it might be a mix of things, right?
Totally. And that's a really interesting point, actually. Like, if you're following people that make you feel bad, don't follow them anymore. You know, like, follow people who inspire you, or, you know, give you motivation or give you ideas. And, you know, like, I just feel like, and that's where it comes to the both sides of responsibility. Like, we're putting out content we believe in, and if you don't believe in it, don't follow it. Like, you know, and I think
you're getting furious and be like, you're wrong, how do you, like, say something?
Yeah, it's like, just don't follow me. Or, you know, if you believe something's really wrong, DM me and we will respond. Like, you know, but, like, I think, and, you know, I go through phases like that as well. Like, I don't really change who I'm following, but I've got, like, a list of, say, like, yogis, a list of, like, bodybuilders, and then I've got gym goers, and then I've got people who don't train at all, and, like, you know, mums, and, like, lifestyle people, and, like, going through different phases that I'm in, I go back to their pages more, depending on what I like. I'm not 1000% in the gym all the time. That's all I think about. Like, you know, everyone like goes through phases, and you know, like what you're looking at should reflect that. And you know,
yeah, because are you still quite social? Like, do you go out with the girls for like drinks and stuff? Like,
yeah,
like the occasional festival. Like, I still love that stuff too, you know.
Oh, and I love it. I love a good party. I like love me a cheeky mug. But yeah, it's, I think that was something that, you know, I held a lot of guilt for that side of me.
Proud of you.
Because I was in the fitness industry and the health industry, and I thought people wouldn't take me as seriously. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, I love the drink with my girls. I love a festival. I love a boogie. Like, I know you do too.
Yeah.
Like, and like, that's just, you know, like I've turned 30 next year. Like, I'm going to make most of it while I can. Yeah.
I know.
You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, I just feel like, you know, there's so many elements to a human life. It doesn't need to revolve around that 5% of your life. But that 5% of like maybe your everyday person's life is like 90% of mine, because it's my job, right? So yeah. But I do believe in balance, because I just get so, like, as humans we socialize through food and drink as well, and celebration. That's how we all interact with each other generally, like, you know. So this is why I believe that, like, you know, sorting out your relationship with your food and yourself, and having balance is like, that's the dream, right?
Yeah. And have you found that it's been a lot easier in terms of the, that balance, like you say, like enjoying time with your friends, having like a drink, and that, that other part of us that we have, do you, have you found that that's been easier since, easier or harder since dropping the app?
I think that it was interesting actually, because okay, I tried really, really hard while I was tracking to stay lean.
Okay.
When I stopped tracking and started eating intuitively, I actually lost weight.
Okay.
Not a lot of weight, but just like that little uncomfortable layer.
Okay.
And I started feeling really, really good. And then so it actually helped me continue that balance, because I was like, when I found that I was beginning to eat more intuitively, like I was talking about practicing not like stuffing myself and stopping when I'm full and eating when I'm hungry, and also placing a focus on the timing of my food, so like eating before a workout and after a workout, and basically making my food like around my like activities, it actually helped a lot, because the intuitive eating meant that like I think I'm in a more natural state for my body now, as opposed to a manipulated state that I was in for so long. Because when you manipulate your calories and everything, you're choosing where you want to be. Totally. And it's all like constructive, and you rely on that structure. And when you take that away and you start like actually feeling like, you know, you're, you know, eating when you're hungry, not when you're not, celebrating when you want to, but not like too much of anything. It actually, it actually works a lot better. I'm like probably in the best balance I've ever been, to be honest.
That makes me so happy. And I'm so thrilled that you were able to share that experience and that story, because one of the biggest fears women come to me with when they're like, I'm ready, I don't want calories to take over my life anymore, but I'm so scared that if I eat intuitively, I'm going to blow up, basically. And there are situations, right, when you're so depleted and undernourished, underweight, where you do need to gain some weight. But there are often times, and this has been happening actually quite recently, we'll often have like a second coaching session or something, and a client's like, oh, I feel like I'm actually, you know, getting a bit leaner even. Or like you say, getting back to your natural state. And I think that's really cool that you were able to share that story, because it hopefully gives other girls that that confirmation that it doesn't have to be that you track calories and then you gain all this weight and you lose control and you feel horrible.
Well, that's the fear, isn't it? That's the underlying fear of it all, is that if you're not tracking, you'll lose it all. But it's because it's so interesting though. This is literally the first time in my life I've been able to be fully not tracking anything, and well, in my adult life, I guess. or like teen life and like get to that point. So it really has been a recent learning curve for me, and I've been in this industry for like 7 or 8 years, you know. So yeah, I totally understand that fear, and I think like now having gone through that, like it does give me the tools to help people transition more. But that just goes to emphasize that, like, you know, we're always on our own little journeys as well, and we're always learning things about this. And you know, I think that's something that, like, I know it's really scary and I'm sure you do too. And it does take practice to do it. And you know, like, I tried to stop tracking beginning of last year and I lasted a month. And you know, I think I hope that it kind of inspires people to give it a go. And if it doesn't work the first time, that's okay. Try again a few months later. Like, you're not going to get everything perfect like that. Like, you know, even with the knowledge like we have.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. This has been the most amazing chat. I think so many girls are going to get a lot from this. And I hope you've enjoyed sharing your story as well, because I know, like we were saying before we even started this episode, when we were having a little chat, it can not always be easy to just talk about like your challenges on social media without actually sitting down and having a nice like flowy conversation like this.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It definitely helps that obviously I've known you for a very long time. And I think, like, you know, like I said to you before, I was like, if there's anything I can say that, like, even just one thing that helps someone else, like, then it's worth the like that I have.
I just love how the timing of this, though. It's really cool that we've booked this chat in at this time in your journey. Like you say, when you've just gone on this intuitive eating, more mindful eating, part of your journey to be able to share that experience. I think this is kind of freaky, actually. It's awesome.
Well, the timing's great. Yeah, I think, like, because it's all like new to me as well. But I've like, so if anyone's watching this, like, honestly, try it. Because like, I honestly feel like the best I've ever had, the most confident I've ever had, like, felt. So, and yeah, it took a lot of practice to get here with that kind of stuff. But once it happens, you'll never go back. Like,
And you're continuing to just practice the mindful eating, because that is hard, right? Like, especially when you've got, like you say, a whole pizza or Indian or something, and you're used to either tracking it or it being kind of like an all or nothing mentality. So. There's little things like that we're always continuing to practice, and that's okay. Awesome. Okay, thanks so much, Katie. If people watching, if they want to follow Katie's journey, which is going to be forever going from what I hear, because you're very mindful, and you know, sounds like you are, you're interested in trying new things and growing as a person and as a personal trainer. I think that will be a cool journey to watch. So it's Katie Parsons Fitness, is that right? Your Instagram?
One.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Okay, and everybody, please send us a message if you've enjoyed this episode. Like and subscribe, and we will see you. I'll see you next week.